Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello, my name's Adrian Goldberg. Thank you for downloading 5 Live Investigates. This week, our reporter Phil Kemp has been on a course that will allow him to make so much money trading foreign currencies that he can give up his job in a year.
Yeah, well, that's the claim anyway. I've been told I can make $2,000 a week from working for just a couple of hours a day. And apparently, I'm the only person holding myself back. Maybe you're suffering the same problem, Adrian.
Maybe I am, Phil. So how do I unlock the secret to the real money-making me?
Well, that's the catch. We've been investigating the man who promises to tell all about his valuable investment strategy, but only to punters willing to part with thousands of pounds of their hard-earned cash. And some people who've been on his courses are telling us they haven't got what they paid for and that they've lost money instead of making it.
Now, would you like to earn £19,000 for just 4 minutes' work? Daft question, really. Who wouldn't? Well, tonight we investigate the company promoting what sounds like the ultimate get-rich-quick scheme. The chance to convert a few thousand pounds into several hundred thousand pounds by following a few simple rules. The man behind it says he can take investors with no experience and turn them into successful currency traders. Yet people we've spoken to say they have been left thousands of pounds out of pocket after buying into the dream.
Get ready, because what you are about to learn may just change your life. Over 100,000 people from over 80 countries have learned from this man how to change their lives forever. He's the founder of the multi-award-winning Knowledge to Action Group, which owns trading floors and trading centres across the globe.
That's an ad for Knowledge to Action, a company that promises to teach ordinary people the tricks of the trade of foreign currency dealing. They boast of having 150 staff in offices in London and Sydney, as well as trading partners in Singapore and America. Let's speak to Richard, not his real name, who has had dealings with Knowledge to Action, been on their courses. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Adrian.
Just tell us how much you lost, Richard, as a result of your involvement with this company.
Well, on the two courses spending together, about £23,000, but also the day that I signed up for the second course, I had on the spot to pay another £500 for computer indicators.
So more than £23,000 is how much you say you're out of pocket. How has it left you all feeling about Knowledge to Action?
I feel very sad and disappointed that which I went after didn't materialise. I wasn't looking to make millions, but I was looking for a career and to be able to trade.
Richard, we'll speak to you a little more later on in the programme. Let's get a quick word as well with someone who used to be on the inside, former Knowledge to Action mentor, John Wills. Hello, John.
Hello, good evening.
And John, what was the quality of the mentoring, of the coaching at Knowledge to Action in your view?
Well, we did what we could when we were allowed to, but there was a very large emphasis on getting people through the door and selling. Also, the coaches did a different role to the mentors, but the experience that 99% of them had was going on the courses at Knowledge to Action.
So many of the coaches were not former city traders, as people might expect, if they were learning all about foreign currency exchange.
Yes, that's correct. That's 99% the case.
We'll speak more with you, John, a little later in the programme as well. Our reporter Phil Kemp is with me. And Phil, you've been looking in detail into this company.
Yeah, Knowledge to Action, or Learn to Trade as it's also known, describes itself as one of the largest international brands providing education in foreign exchange, or Forex in the jargon, and stock market trading.
Yeah, and you went on a free seminar that promised to let you in on their secrets. What was it like?
Well, it was in a swanky hotel in Knightsbridge. And I didn't learn how to be a trader, but I did get plenty of hard sell. Mm. I was shown a video showing the company founder Greg Secker making £19,000 in just 4 minutes. He was also shown trading for no apparent reason from a helicopter as part of a charity gig. I was told the only thing holding me back from making my fortune was myself. And to give you some idea of the sort of sales line I heard, one I remember was, if you don't have a brand new Range Rover on your drive tomorrow morning, would it be painful? If it's not, Well, it should be. It's drummed into you that it's entirely reasonable to expect to be making between £1,000 and £2,000 a week. And there are frequent references to sending your kids to private school on the back of the proceeds that you'd be making from your trading.
And listening to that little bit of video promo as well, they make it sound as though anyone can do it.
Yeah, Knowledge to Action say that anyone can learn to trade. But as you go on, the presenter also makes it clear that the seminar is just an introduction and that to become a successful trader, you will need to go on another one of their longer courses. And guess what? For that, you have to pay. Mm. And the course that we were told about cost £13,000.
13 grand.
Yeah. Now, it wasn't clear exactly how long that was going to be, that course, but we were told that it did include one-to-one coaching.
I'm just thinking, though, £13,000. I mean, that's more than a year's study at Oxford or Cambridge University.
Yeah, but according to Knowledge to Action, you should be able to earn all that money back and more through your trading. The presenter at the seminar that I attended said that if you started with about £5,000 in your trading account and you traded for just 1.5 hours a day, you could recover that cost within just 6 months. They do say that it could take longer if you have less in your trading account.
Well, I guess for many people, the hardest thing would be stumping up that 13 grand in the first place to go on the course.
Well, here we were in luck because they said we were going to be part of a special offer. It was a special deal for just 50 customers and the cost was only going to be £2,000.
Interesting. When you were there, Phil, did you feel that you could realistically make big money if you paid the cash and did the course?
Well, it was emphasised over and over again that this was the way to fulfil your dreams. And the guy doing our presentation was supposedly living proof of this. For example, he made references to his sports car. And another thing that sticks in my mind is the fact that he had his jumper tucked in, showing what's got to be the flashiest designer belt I've ever seen. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Let's get a word with two people now who've been on the two-day course. Sarah, not her real name. Hi, Sarah.
Hello there.
And hi. Also to Dave Thomas. Dave, what first attracted you to Knowledge to Action?
Well, I have to say, it was presented to me through an employment website. At the time, I was unemployed and was looking for work. And this particular website, in order to access the pages of the jobs on, would flash up, you know, that full-page advert. So this was a full-page advert that introduced me to the concept of trading, and it was Knowledge to Action. And it was a very positive advert, which suggested very strongly that the possibility of learning how to trade and this using this as a part-time income was a real possibility.
And what was your actual experience of it then?
No, it didn't happen at all. Your reporter, Phil, has taken the words out of my mouth, really, with regards to the free seminar. Particularly the bit he talks about that it was a special offer. You know, I don't know how much the course was supposed to be, but then it was down to 30 special people and it was a one-off that it was only going to happen that time.
Oh, you were offered the special reduced rate as well for the course. You were a special person on a different day in a different place. Let me bring in Dave. Dave, what was your experience?
Hello there. Well, it's very much similar to what's being said already. Yeah. It seems a common form, but I was made redundant as well. And through that, we lost our house. So I was quite short of money and looking for something that I could, you know, find something to do in the workplace.
So how much did you pay for your course, Dave?
It cost £2,000.
And what did you get from that in terms of knowledge to become a successful foreign exchange trader?
The £2,000 bought me a two-day course down at their trading floor in London. Plus 3 half-an-hour coaching sessions, which happened after the course when you was at home or wherever. And, well, I mean, that was just a joke, really, because all he did was come on the phone and as he was talking to me, all he was doing was asking me what I was doing. He wasn't actually coaching me.
Have you become a successful foreign currency trader despite after making your £2,000 investment?
No, I haven't. That's the big thing that annoys me. I went into it because I've always been interested in stocks and shares, and I felt it was something that I could do as a career. You know, because when we went to the free seminar, I asked a question afterwards to one of the guys who'd been taking it. I told him that I was keen. I said, I'm not bothered about making tens and twenties and hundreds of thousands of pounds in a short time. I was looking to set myself up and try and manage a career out of it. To which they told me that if you put in the hard work and you follow our steps, you know, one-to-one, and do as we tell you, there's no reason why you can't do it. You don't have to start with, you know, £100,000 in your bank account. You can start with as little as £1,000. They said, if you're following our steps, then you'll have no trouble, you know, becoming successful at it, and then you can start to increase how much you put in and do it that way. But I was, like I said, I was out of work, so I mean, my partner will tell you and vouch for me, I was studying it for hours and hours, doing everything they told me, step-by-step guide, not putting a foot wrong, setting the stops up, what they showed me to do. And, well, I mean, if you made £10 out of a trade, you was absolutely delighted. It felt like £1 million you'd won. Because
Dave, thank you for your story. Sarah, how much did you pay for your course?
Yeah, about the same as Dave.
About 2,000 quid. Are you now a successful foreign exchange trader?
No, I'm not. The weekend course, there's no way, it's impossible that you could become a trader from that weekend course. You can't do it because the way the course runs is that it's very intensive over 2 days. There's a lot of information. The information, you do need to have a background in understanding something to do with trading. You can't go. One of the things that I was told very clearly at the free seminar and on the 2 day course is that you're better if you have no knowledge of trading. People, novices and people with no knowledge are the ones that are become better traders because they don't have any preconceived ideas. And that was said to me.
Sarah, thank you for joining us and sharing your story on Five Live Investigates. Thanks also to Dave. I'm very keen to hear from you tonight as well. If you've been on a Knowledge to Action course, how successful are you? Have you been on other foreign currency trading courses? Can anyone learn the tricks of the trade and become a successful dealer?
On DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
5 Live Investigates with Adrian Goldberg.
Tonight, the company that says it can teach total novices how to make millions from investing in foreign currency. But we've heard from one unhappy customer who says that instead of making money, he's ended up £23,000 worse off. And a former insider at the company, Knowledge to Action, has told us that often the coaches giving the advice weren't trading floor experts, just people who had themselves been on the company's courses. And Dave and Sarah have just told us how they felt the course they went on was just a marketing tool for the real money spinner, something called the Unlimited Wealth Programme, which cost around £19,000 to attend. Let's speak more to Richard, who signed up for that Unlimited Wealth Programme. Richard, what persuaded you to sign up for the Unlimited Wealth Programme?
Well, it's interesting that both Sarah and Dave have spoken about being unemployed. I too was unemployed, and I decided at 42 that I wanted a new career. I had some understanding of money and finance, but I decided to look about doing something that I could work from home, that I could have a career, and that I could make a living out of. I didn't want to make millions, that would have been very nice, but I wanted to be able to do some things that would make my life comfortable and also help members of the family out.
You've talked about spending more than £23,000 on various courses. How successful have you been?
I don't trade.
You've given it up.
I gave up in February. It's actually John Wills was my mentor. He left in December. No mentor was ever replaced.
Could it just be that you were unsuited to the world of foreign exchange trading? It wasn't for you.
I would love to be able to say and hold my hands up and say it wasn't, you know, yes, I wasn't suited to it. However, I have an academic background. I have an ability to study. I was putting a lot of time in reading their stuff, looking at it, reading around the subject, analysing charts, trying to use the methods that Knowledge to Action had gave. And they did not work. I got to the point where I decided either I keep on and I lose the little bit of money I have left, or I stop.
Richard, thanks for joining us tonight. Let's speak to Justin Urquhart-Stewart, co-founder and director of Seven Investment Management, listening on the line. Justin, good evening to you.
Good evening, Jason.
How easy is it to be a successful foreign currency trader?
It's very difficult. It takes a lot of training and experience. And also, just as many of your callers have been saying, on your own doing it, even with an apparent mentor at the end of it, you need to be able to have the infrastructure around you, people to train you, support you, and to make sure that if things do go wrong, you can try and be helped through it. It takes a long time.
Is it something, in your view, that could be learned over the course of a two-day tuition course?
Utterly impossible. You may find people who have an aptitude to be able to trade, and that's one thing. You need that aptitude. But being able to really responsibly do that over 2 days, absolutely not. These sound exactly like those property training schemes and those share dealings training schemes, proffering and preying on the weak the opportunity of being able to get rich quick. You can't.
Justin, thank you. We've heard about the techniques the company uses to get people to sign up to courses. And one of the big selling points is that students will have access to coaches who are experienced traders themselves. We've been hearing from John Wills, who worked as a mentor for the company for just under a year. He left a few months ago. And John, what did you do at the company?
Right, OK. My official position with regards to the client and their knowledge of me was advanced trading mentor. However, for the company, I was an advanced sales.
So just so I can understand that, to the customers you were portrayed as a mentor, but your job within the company was actually to sell courses to them.
Yes, that's right. When I was first given my contract, I queried this, and they said, well, no, you know, it's just a name on a piece of paper. This is the job. You look after clients. You help them with a roadmap for the 12-month period. The coaches do the actual technical side.
And you've mentioned that many of the coaches were people who had only been on the company's courses rather than having a background actually in the city or trading on foreign exchange floors. Did the customers realise that?
No. Initially, there was definitely an image created that this is a live trading floor. There's nobody there that had a proprietary trading floor background. There was one chap that had worked in the city, but he did front-end lecturing. That was it.
And what kind of pressure did you come under to get people to pay for additional courses?
Oh, there was immense pressure. There were very high target levels set. And if you weren't dealing with people face-to-face, you were expected to hit the telephones and do telesales.
John, thanks very much indeed for joining us tonight. And Phil, you've been looking at the man behind the company.
Yeah, this is Greg Secker. He is billed as a master trader who was a multimillionaire in his 20s and who has blazed a path for the everyday man in the street to walk towards financial freedom.
And that all sounds very impressive.
Yeah, and by the age of just 25, Greg was made vice president at Mellon Financial Corporation, which is an American investment bank.
Yeah, and I was checking out the Knowledge to Action website myself tonight, and it says that at Mellon, Greg Secker was, and I quote, lucky enough to be working around some of the very best traders in the world with exclusive access, working with high-powered forex traders every single day.
Yeah, but we looked a bit more closely. The bank, which is now known as BNY Mellon, told the BBC that Mr. Secker had actually worked in their IT department in foreign exchange operations, reporting to a senior manager there.
So despite the fact that he was working closely with these high-powered traders, Greg Secker wasn't actually a trader himself.
Well, it sounds more like he was working in IT at Mellon. To be fair, when you read his website carefully, it doesn't actually say he was a trader, but clearly a lot of people who have paid for his course were under the impression that they would be learning from an experienced city trader.
Well, the man behind the company, Greg Secker, is with us now in the studio. Good evening to you, Greg.
Good evening.
Just curious to know how much money you've made as a foreign exchange dealer yourself using the methods that your company teaches.
Oh, look, I'm not going to start getting into all of that. I'll answer your questions about our programme and our courses, but in terms of exposing my net worth on the radio, that's not what I'm here to do tonight.
No, but I think it's an important point because the suggestion made by your critics, the suggestion made by your critics is that you're very good at running training courses, but that you're not particularly successful as a foreign exchange trader. So what evidence have you got that you are successful in the field that you are teaching?
We publish trading results. We run a fund where people
You publish trading results, but again, I must press you on this. We're talking about how successful you are as a foreign exchange trader? Because that goes to the heart, it seems to me, of your credibility as a mentor and a teacher and a guide.
And there are results that we have published in the past, and we run a fund where people can invest their money if they don't wish to trade themselves, and we run programmes which show people how to do it. We do not profess to turn people into millionaires. We simply give them a training programme with professional traders who follow the systems that we teach and show them how to do it.
If you're so successful as a foreign exchange trader, why have you set up a business running training courses?
Well, why not? I mean, what is a trader? Somebody takes a low-risk opportunity in the market using systems and strategies that work and then look to leverage it. Why do we run trading floors and training centres all over the world? Because it makes money. And if people want to learn how to do it, it seems to me to be a good idea to show people how to do it, to give them the opportunity to make money themselves. And also, and you're quite right in your report, we do give those people opportunities to come coaches on our trading floor. The chap you keep referring to is the employee from our company was certainly not a trainer, was not a trader coach. He was a salesman.
Well, we have seen evidence that John Wills was described by the company as an advanced trading mentor. We've spoken to a customer who backed
that. Yes, I understand that. But if he was so disappointed with what we do, why did he copy our business model verbatim? Why did he steal our customers? And why did he copy our sales brochure onto his website? Like even leaving our company name onto his website. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, with respect, this interview is about you and not him.
Well,
and,
you know, I don't think you can rely on him as a reliable source of information.
But can we rely on you to teach and mentor people about foreign exchange trading when you are so secretive about your own success
I'm entitled, as everybody else in this country is to keep how much net worth they have to themselves.
See, I mean, are you straight enough about your own past?
I've spoken, Justin Urquhart Stewart was on there, I've shared a panel with him many times at the Investor Exchange, and I've been very clear, I was fortunate enough to learn how to trade from professional traders. I built trading systems. Trading today, 60% of it is technology. It's not people running around wearing yellow jackets, hooting and hollering. 65% of foreign exchange trading is technology, building systems to expose profit-making opportunities in the currency market.
I mean, Phil has been at a seminar in which a film has been shown of you, showing that you've made 19,000 pounds in 4 minutes.
Correct.
We've heard from people who have lost money as a result of going on to your courses, unemployed people who could scarcely afford the cash. How do you explain the fact that despite your courses being for novices, these people have lost desperately needed money?
First and foremost, you've approached people who have been actually not, you haven't approached people, they have been presented to you from an ex-employee with an axe to grind. So you've been given a very small percentage of people who have been unsuccessful on the course for whatever reason.
How do you explain their lack of success?
Well, first and foremost, they have to take their own responsibility into their own hands. You send your child to private school and he doesn't pass his common entrance at 11, are you going to go to the headmaster and ask for your money back?
You're not told that at your courses, though. I mean, the impression you get...
We are told on our courses...
The impression
courses,
you get from your presentation... when you go to it, is that there's really not much risk involved
That's
at all.
As long absolutely
as you,
not true.
As long as you follow what you're told.
Well, there can be zero risk. There can be zero risk. On our programmes, I give our delegates my money to trade. So if you want to come on our programme and you don't want to risk any of your money, I will fund you personally. I've personally funded lots of clients with millions on the table where they actually have none of their capital at risk. In this economic climate,
some of our
I've
listeners who we heard from did, though. Can I just bring...
No, they didn't. No, those clients, none of those clients have taken the opportunity to trade my money. Those that those that have had the opportunity to trade my money have given favourable reports. Your researchers, when they contacted us, said all of the people we spoke to had a negative review of your company. And we had customers calling us in saying, I gave a glowing, praiseful report about your business because I'm excited, I'm happy with the results I've got. I said, well, that's not what the BBC said. And then you retorted from that and said, OK, well, then some of the people.
We've spoken to 20 people, two of whom were satisfied customers with your course. 18
20
of them
is a very non-representative sample of our business. We teach thousands of people around the world. This year, for the last 6 years, I've wanted to win a particular award for our business, which is the number one best education provider in foreign exchange. Now, the Online Trading Academy have held that for a good 11 years in the States. It's taken me 6 years to win it. When they did the research, they didn't do a quick five-minute gathering of an ex-employee's disgruntled
Neither
list of clients.
Neither with respect have we, because that's not how we operate
to do
on this
They
program.
Took months to do it, and they awarded us this year the best provider in foreign exchange education. You don't get that from promising pipe dreams to people and not delivering on the promise.
Let's speak to Justin Urquhart-Stewart. Justin, what do you make of what you've heard?
You've got to be able to make sure you attract the right sort of people. To be a trader, you have to have the right aptitude. Being able to offer this to the general public so easily, I think, is actually very dangerous indeed.
Go ahead.
Well, look, I mean, I agree. The individual has to take responsibility for their situation. I didn't realise the three people you'd spoken to were out of work at the time, and maybe they were under due financial pressure at the time, and that's not the right environment to take on learning to trade. I'm telling you that for straight, and we're very clear about that. When we present from the platform, we say, A, this is not a get-rich-quick scheme. I disagree. You can teach people the mechanics of implementing a successful trading strategy in 2 days. That you can.
Not a get-rich-quick scheme. £19,000 in 4 minutes. You've got your coach at the front talking about his sports car, showing off his flashy designer belt. Come on, that's exactly the image that you give, isn't it?
Well, certainly. You know, over time, we expect somebody to build up their trading account where they can produce bigger income, but they're not going to do £19,000 in 4 minutes. I've been trading for 18 years of my life.
But talk about people being in a position to leave their job after a year.
We have delegates who have done that.
How many?
I don't know the exact number right now. If you'd asked me before the show, I'd have brought you the statistics in. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of delegates who are over the moon with the results they've got, yet you guys have decided not to contact them, and I question why.
We'll open it up to them. They can contact us tonight. Greg Secker, thank you very much indeed for coming in. Greg Secker in the studio. If you have done a Knowledge to Action course, we would be delighted to hear from you.
On DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
5 Live Investigates with Adrian Goldberg.
Now, last week on 5 Live Investigates, we had the story that anyone who drives on the motorway couldn't afford to ignore. It was all about the highways contractors who charge motorists for accidents they didn't cause. Well, this week, the follow-up, and it's something that no driver, whatever road you travel on, can afford to miss, because we've discovered that local councils are getting in on the act by loading charges onto drivers who are simply the victims of bad luck. First, though, we're getting your reaction to our story about Knowledge to Action, the firm selling courses costing thousands of pounds to people who want to become foreign exchange traders. If you want to text us, it's 85058, or you can email goldberg@bbc.co.uk. Let's get a word now with David Fisher, who we were told by Knowledge to Action is a happy customer. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thank you.
Good evening. Just tell us about your story then, because obviously so far in the programme we've heard from people who were pretty disgruntled, and we said to Knowledge to Action, you know, who might be a happy customer. You're one. How much did you invest and how much have you made?
Well, I suppose I invested around about the same amount of money as the others. I take the trading very seriously. It was a two-day intensive course. I'm not trading my funds because I chose the course that I went on because Knowledge to Action were going to put their money where their mouth was and have given me a live trading account.
And what does that mean?
I've got their money on an account. I trade their account. I'm trading their account. It's as simple as that.
So you've spent £2,000 of your own money or thereabouts on a course, but you're not currently trading with your own cash to try and make money for yourself in that way?
No. I mean, I can do if I want to, but I've got a program with them that if I'm successful, it'll increase, and if I'm not successful, then they pick up the losses.
Do they pay you a salary for that?
No.
So if you're confident in the course that the company has offered and you're willing to trade with their money, why don't you trade with your own money?
I can do, and I do on odd occasions. If I have a demo account, I have my account, and I have their account. The demo account I use for practicing. I mean, the thing to know about this is that I knew right from the start that this wasn't a get-rich-quick scheme. You get told again and again before you go on the course, when you're on the course, after the course, that it's not a get-rich-quick scheme.
With respect, David, that's not quite the experience of Phil, who went on one of their seminars himself.
I was going to say, I think you must have been on a completely different course to me, because all I heard about was how I was going to be able to give up my job in a year, how I could buy a 911 convertible for my partner within a year. I mean, that's what you're sold. That's what you're told.
That is that element that actually, if you can be fast-tracked, and if you are one of the bright ones, that you might get onto that scheme. or you might be able to achieve those goals.
But don't you think that's selling a slightly unrealistic vision of what can be achieved?
Not for the right person. You know, I can't answer for other people, but I know that, you know, under my scheme, I'm assigned. I don't have a mentor because I don't. I suppose that's not the program I went on. But I've got a risk manager, and he even reminds me with emails and the other delegates. It's not a sprint. This is you know, you're here for the long term.
Have you been able to give up your day job yet?
No, because that's not the way it works. There's nowhere in the world I could give up my day job and the programme that we've got.
I'm just slightly puzzled, if I'm honest, Davey, because the company have suggested to us that you are an example of a happy customer, somebody who believes in the knowledge-to-action way of foreign exchange dealing, yet you're not, by and large, trading with your own money, nor have you made any significant sums of profit for yourself out of your trading. So you're a curious example, it seems to me, of a happy customer.
Yeah, happy customer, because I suppose I look to the future, to where I want to be and how I'm getting there. And with that, I'm getting the coaching, I'm getting the risk manager to keep the stabilizers on the bike. And when the stabilizers come off, I think the stabilizers have probably come off, and he's there to ready to catch me before I fall. If I fall, picks me up, puts me back on, and make sure that I can carry on down the path that I'm going down.
But it's about a year since you finished your course?
Did the course December last year. Didn't go live on the live trading account until probably about June this year. But before then, I was given a demo account, so I was using that for practice, and that certainly went up and down. In the early first couple of months, it yo-yoed. And there you can practice the strategies. It is technical trading. It's not analytical. It's very detailed.
I'm not quite sure that I understand the difference. I'm not sure that many of our listeners will, David.
Okay.
If it is that technical, David, is it really suitable for novices, people who have no background in the world of foreign exchange trading?
I'm not a psychologist, and I don't think I could answer that. After having been on the course, it's not for everybody. And I think the people who go on the course certainly, I'm in touch with most, if not all, of the people who went on the course that I was on. The majority, I think, probably are still, feel as though they've done the right thing. They've all got their live trading accounts. The ones who haven't gone live, probably not for them.
Would you be surprised, or have you been surprised to discover tonight that a number of the Knowledge to Action coaches don't actually have direct experience of a trading floor themselves?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. I think the first time I met anybody from Knowledge to Action, they had been trained in the methodology of Knowledge to Action, and they told me that quite openly. As you know, I asked them straight, you know, how did you learn Knowledge to Action? My risk manager is trained on the Knowledge to Action methodology, and that's what he trades himself. And
okay,
trades
so I come back to my core point here, David, that having been presented to us as a happy customer by the company and having invested your own money into a course, here we are nearly a year on, you appear to have made no profit from the teaching that the company has given you.
And your point is?
If you're a happy customer and you've made no money, then what's the point of going on the course? What's the point of your investment?
Well, back to my original point was I knew from the start that this was not a, you know, quick turnaround. 3 months later, got my money back and I've got a million in the bank. It doesn't work like that. And anybody who thinks it does work like that, you know, yes, you've got to sell the idea, but actually, if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. It, you know, this to me, my program is a 2-year program. I know that from the get-go of getting the live account as a 2-year program.
David Fisher, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Don't forget, you can add your thoughts on our investigation into Knowledge to Action tonight. Positive or negative, all thoughts are welcome. You can email goldberg@bbc.co.uk. You can text us on 85058 or on Twitter. We're at BBC 5 Live.
On DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
5 Live investigates.
Now, last week on 5 Live Investigates, we told you about the private contractors who were sending out bills for hundreds or even thousands of pounds to ordinary drivers who were guilty of nothing more than bad luck after skidding on water or oil. In one case, a motorcyclist was sent a bill for £10,000 for damaging a barrier, even though he had had to swerve to avoid a random lump of concrete on the motorway and ended up in hospital. Hundreds of you got in touch with us about the story, and we've discovered it's not just on the motorways that people are being hit with hefty charges. Local councils up and down the land are also sending out these bills. And in many cases, it's a similar story to the one we heard last week. The repair charges seem incredibly high, given the level of damage caused, and in some cases, they appear to be totally made up. One of the many listeners who got in touch with 5 Live Investigates is Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
So what happened to you?
It was actually my son.
Yeah.
He aquaplaned into some rough ground beside the road, near us. And then when we were doing the insurance claim, you know, later in the week, the guy at the other end of the phone from the insurance company said, oh, by the way, the local council are going to claim for a hedge you damaged. But there weren't any hedges there. It was just, you know, scrub land at the side of the road.
So he was the innocent victim of an incident on a road, skids off, lucky, I suppose, to escape with his life,
then
finds out that he's being charged for damaging a hedge that wasn't there.
Yeah, there's no hedge, no, just some overgrown grass and,
How much?
They never said how much they were claiming. It's just he said, well, there wasn't a hedge. I'll take some photographs and, prove it. And we never, they backed down at that point.
That's very interesting. We had quite a few examples of that last week when people challenged the charges. They disappeared. But fancy being charged for causing damage to a hedge that didn't exist. Someone else who's contacted us is Jeremy Rawlings. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
And you also faced a curious claim from a local authority. Tell us what happened with you.
Well, I was just driving along the road and the guy on the opposite side of the road skidded and hit me.
Yeah.
There was no damage to the road at all, absolutely zilch. There was some leakage of radiator water and a few bits of broken stuff, which the contractor that fetched my car cleared up completely, and he put some of those granule stuff down, you know, to clean up the spillage.
Yeah.
And then I got a bill from the council for £600 for spillage on the carriageway, for which I'm held liable.
Even though you were the innocent party in this particular case?
When I telephoned the council, they said, yes, you're the innocent party, so just send it through to your insurance company and they'll deal with it, which is what I did, and I've never heard any more. But it strikes me that it's simply the insurance company then just went to the other guy's insurance company and just said, here's the bill for £600, and they just paid it.
Very interesting, Jeremy. Thank you very much indeed for contacting us. To give us an idea of the scale of some of these charges, let's speak to Chris Ransom, who until recently was a motor claims advisor for the Royal Bank of Scotland Insurance, which owns the likes of Direct Line and Churchill. Chris, hiya.
Hiya.
So how often do you see these bills coming in from local authorities?
Originally, they never really came in, you never heard, but sort of over the last 2 or 3 years, they've become very prevalent. Often,
and,
you know, you're dealing with 4 or 5 a day, just myself.
And I think we established last week that if people cause damage to the highway through negligence or through a deliberate act, then they can legitimately be charged for it. But certainly on the evidence of Mary and Jeremy, these seem like cheeky claims.
Yeah, very much so. You know, how often we get bills for, you know, the little plastic indication arrows at junctions and damage to railings at crossings and things like that, and they can amount to hundreds and hundreds of pounds, you know, sometimes for a plastic bollard. And how many times do we drive around the same plastic bollards are missing? You know, it seems to be a thing. I think the previous listener there with the grass verges, often if you leave the road they'll charge you to re-turf the bit of verge that you hit.
Really? I've not heard of
it. It'll grow back.
What is the largest claim or the kinds of large claims that you've experienced?
I think the most disproportionate one, like you were, is for spillage on the carriageway.
Mm.
Again, an insurance company, if they question it, you know, there's no proof it's gone, you know, and a bag of spill-dry, the granules, is £12.50. And how they can justify charging hundreds just to clear a bit of fluid off the road. So sometimes even the police or the breakdown services clear themselves.
It was interesting that Jeremy said he assumed that his insurance company had sent it off to the other person's insurance company, who presumably may well have paid. But this is part of that line of argument that we end up pushing up motor insurance premiums for everyone, unless insurance companies resist these kind of charges where they are unjustified.
Yeah. The ultimate loser is every single person in the country that's got a motor insurance policy. The insurance companies have to factor that in when they look at premiums. You know, I think now that the lowest element of any claim is actually fixing the car. It's just a never-ending spiral, and the insurance companies, for the number of claims they get, you know, realistically, how much is it going to cost them to investigate every single one of them?
Very interesting.
So in the end, you just have to sort of grin and bear it and say, yeah, OK, we'll pay that.
Really? Chris Ransom, thank you very much indeed. That's a very interesting admission, isn't it, from Chris Ransom, who's got extensive experience in the insurance industry. And on the original story that we ran about inflated charges sent out by motorway contractors, well, a whistleblower who tipped us off about dodgy goings-on agreed this week to let us broadcast his account of some of the things which happened when he worked for one of these contractors recently. He's been telling me about one stretch of motorway where he worked until recently this year.
On the network that I was on, there is a number of places that I refer to as Strike Alley. It's where, on one road in particular, the camber of the road is such that when you get quite a heavy, substantial pour down, cars spin off an identical place time and time again, and they will hit the barrier exactly the same place within a foot or two of each other. Now, I have seen where three strikes over a period of, say, 4 days. Now, the initial damage that was done has been done. The other two vehicles that hit it did no further damage. However, all three insurance companies are billed for the same amount of damage.
And so the piece of motorway barrier and the post wouldn't have been damaged any further in the meantime. There's one piece of damage being caused, but three separate motorists are being charged for it.
That's correct.
Were the problems caused, though, by disgruntled, disillusioned individuals, or do you think there was a systematic operation by management to ensure that motorists are deprived as much cash as possible, even if they've been innocent victims of a motorway incident?
What my view is, everyone that started at the same time as I did, we were all out there, we were all chomping at the bit, ready to go. And within a very, very short period of time, reality hit home that you don't do this, you don't do that, because that costs the company money. You're there, where possible, to rake the revenue back.
To claw revenue back from motorists, even if they have been...
That's correct.
..involved
That's
in correct. An incident for which they were not responsible.
That's right.
And you were encouraged to do that by management.
People on the network are encouraged to do it, yes.
Interesting stuff. An insider's whistleblowing account of working for one motorway repair contractor, which send out inflated bills to drivers who'd had an incident on the road for which they were not responsible. And don't forget, if you've got more to tell us about that story, or if there's something you want us to investigate, just drop us an email to goldberg@bbc.co.uk. Now, we've been hearing a lot on the programme tonight about private highway contractors ripping off insurance companies, but more and more of us are apparently ripping off insurance companies too, so much so that there's now a special police unit being set up to deal with it. And if the shame of being caught by the cops isn't enough to put the criminals off, well, perhaps a new TV programme might be. Claimed and Shamed starts on BBC One tomorrow. Let's get a quick word with the series producer, Susie Davies. Hi, Susie.
Hi there.
So what kind of people are going to be shamed on this TV programme, to take your title word?
Well, it's basically lots of people make sort of personal injury claims on their insurance policies, and when insurance companies start to doubt their claims, they will often hire surveillance companies to carry out surveillance on these people to see if the level of liability is actually true. So we've got hold of a lot of this footage that you'll see where they follow these people for a certain amount of time and basically catch them out doing things they're doing. One of the people we see in our series, I think on Tuesday, is a footballer who basically claimed that, you know, after a car accident, he couldn't work. He was needing to have move into a single-story building, have the full level of care, constant protection. When a surveillance company decided to follow him, they catch him playing football on Sunday and getting man of the match. And
I've got to say, I've seen some of the footage myself, and to actually see these stories being brought out to the open is quite amazing. I want to get a quick word as well with DCI David Ward from the Insurance Fraud Enforcement Department at the City of London Police, which is the new specialist unit that's been set up. And David, is it fair to say that traditionally the police have looked at this as a crime that's really down for the insurance companies to sort out rather than criminal fraud?
Well, unfortunately, police forces have various different priorities that are local to their area, and frauds like this, you're quite right, wouldn't fit within that. But the insurance industry has recognised the problem. It's actually the tune of £3 billion a year, and that equates to £50 on every insurance policy directly attributable to insurance fraud.
And a lot of the perpetrators would say, you know, or see it as a victimless crime, wouldn't they? That nobody's getting hurt.
Well, as I just said, £50 on every policy. I'm sure the Radio 5 listeners share my view that we don't like paying our hard-earned money to criminals who don't work for a living.
There is also the practical result for many of the people who are guilty of these frauds, isn't there? That they may never get insurance again. I mean, it might make it very difficult to drive a car, for example, if you're guilty of motor insurance fraud.
That's correct. The industry have just launched a new thing called the Insurance Fraud Register, which will host a database of proven fraudsters. And you're exactly right, what you explained there will happen as of now.
Do you think the programme itself might act as a deterrent? People will see other people named and shamed.
Very much so. Last year, you could say this was a crime possibly without consequence. Police forces have other priorities. Now my unit has arrested so far this year 215 of these fraudsters. There's every chance now you're going to get a knock on your door if you commit insurance fraud from one of our IFED, Insurance Fraud Enforcement Department detectives.
Susie, what kind of punishment were people getting for the crimes that you've highlighted in your programme?
Well, I think, like Dave said, for many years it was sort of going unpunished. So people would just sort of think, well, there's no reason not to try and make a claim because there's going to be no sort of recourse if the claim fails. But, you know, with the new police unit, with this, it's called the Insurance Fraud Bureau, they all get together now and they all sort of share information, and now insurers are talking to each other. And so when people are starting to crop up time and time again making these little claims, they involve the police. And with this new register, people will start getting on the register and people will find it really hard to, you know, to get insurance in the future.
Susie, thanks for joining us tonight. That's Susie Davis. We also heard from DCI David Wood from the City of London Police. And you can watch for yourself, 11 a.m. tomorrow morning, Claimed and Shamed on BBC One. Thanks for listening to the 5 Live Investigates download. And don't forget, if there's something you want us to investigate, you can email goldberg@bbc.co.uk.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC.co.uk/5Live.